This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Facebook is preventing users from sharing a New York Post story about how a co-founder of Black Lives Matter spent millions of dollars to buy several homes. Attempts to share the story Friday morning produced a Facebook error message, quote, "Your content couldn't be shared because this link goes against our community standards."
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, coming up in about 30 minutes or so, we'll talk about big tech. Amazon may allow you to use your palm to scan at Whole Foods. A lot going on, so we'll fill you in on that. Right now, if you're just joining us, we're dealing with a lot of different issues that are affecting the culture. I was sharing with you how the feds, right now the Department of Education, came out. And they're, look, this whole administration is very bold, very clear. They want to promote critical race theory. And the Department of Education basically said, "Hey, we want to eliminate all plausible deniability. We want to direct civics grants the money towards programs that prioritize applications that support the development of these culturally responsive teaching and learning." And we're seeing math right now. I started the conversation, if you're just joining me, about how the Virginia Department of Education, and again, you see how the schools, you see how our educational institutions here are really influencing the culture, how they're really attacking the family, how they're targeting our children. They're preparing to eliminate accelerated math programs. You can't be in one. I don't care how gifted you are, how bright, what kind of genius you are. Maybe math is your thing. Can't do that. They want to eliminate any accelerated math program prior to 11th grade. Why? We have to have equity. You need equity in mathematics. What? It's just absolutely silly. It's going to stifle advancement for gifted students. It's going to set them back. It's going to put them at a disadvantage. You know, you ever see where the U.S. stands right now compared to the other nations? And one final note here, and then I want to grab some calls here for you. One other thing, and maybe we'll talk about this in greater detail later. The Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, he sent out a directive authorizing U.S. outposts to fly the LGBT flag on the same flagpole as the U.S. flag. And under U.S. law, embassies and other official outposts have got to be granted permission by the State Department before they post any banner or anything other than the flag on the flagstaffs outside their offices. So I saw a comment earlier today from the Heritage Foundation. Their foreign policy analyst is a guy named Daniel. I think it's Cochus. I think. I'm trying to remember his name. And he basically says, look, what we're seeing here is a progressive narrative. They're pushing progressive narratives. And these will run afoul. They'll run a left, if you will, or a foul of local religious or cultural sensitivities. And when it comes to the U.S., it's going to besmirch us as an impartial interlocutor, he says, in many countries. So you can see right now what is coming out on many different fronts. And I've invited today to join us a very gifted author and the founder of a website you should check out, personandidentity.com. It's good to have with me Dr. Teresa Farnan. And Doctor, your book, Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public Schools Before It's Too Late, is a must-read for people to give them a good perspective on all the insanity that's happening in our educational systems and the rise of Marxism. But people and identity, very quickly here, too. Maybe you can explain what is at that site and what kind of value they may find.
So we actually started this website, personandidentity.com, this past year in response to just an overwhelming demand from parents and from educators about the incursion of gender and transgenderism primarily into the public schools and into our culture, because these parents are being blindsided. Their kids are coming home. In some cases, their child transitions at school, and the parent isn't allowed to know until the transition is well underway, and they have they're asking to be put on cross-sex hormones at the local gender identity clinic. So that was why I mentioned to the caller in the last hour, critical race theory is one aspect of how the left is trying to really train our children to be progressive activists. But in addition, they're also deconstructing everything they understand, everything we've known for centuries, for millennia, about the nature of the person, the importance of the family, the fact that children need a mother and a father, the immutability of being male or female. All of that is being called into question and being replaced by this made-up vocabulary that allows the state and the progressive left to be the final authority on identity. And along the way, they turn children away from their families and away from previous generations and reject the whole deposit of wisdom, including the wisdom of the church and the wisdom of Christianity.
It's so frustrating to me, Doctor, because, you know, elections are not about somebody's, just about their character, what they look like, or, you know, what their foreign policy is. It's so much more, you know, and you have to look at these candidates. I go back to the election after election, whether it deals with our courts, whether it deals with who, you know, what will this candidate do with our educational systems? You know, what are they going to do with this critical race theory or with gender ideology? What are they going to do when it comes to life? I mean, there's so many issues. And we as Americans, I mean, we can decry what's going on, but we reap what we sow. And I this should be a wake-up call for everyone who's saying, I can't believe we're here. You know, when it comes to the next election, make sure you look at the person, not just on a single issue, not just on COVID or the economy or whatever it is that pushes your button, but we got to look at the big picture. How did we get, and I want to get to these phones, but how did we get to this point? I mean, how did we abdicate parental authority? How did we abdicate our educational systems? I mean, how did we get to this point?
It's been a long process. I mean, the left has been at this for decades, starting in the 1990s when they put clinics that dispense contraceptives to children into public schools, yep. And then told us that a young person is mature enough to be able to make their own decisions. And unfortunately, most of us who have, you know, people who have jobs, people who are working, busy taking care of your families, all the nonsense going on in academia, we tended to dismiss it as something that, you know, the crazy people who teach in universities take seriously, but nobody else does because it doesn't have any practical impact. Well, now we're seeing what it looks like when you take academic ideologies and try to impose them on a society. And we're all going to pay the price for that because it's just a divisive, destructive ideology.
And as James is listening in Chicago, he's been hanging out. He wants to join the conversation. James, thanks for your patience. You're on the air with Dr. Farnan.
Hi, James.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. How are you? I think when I look at the use of the terms equity and equality, I think equity was come up with specifically to be confused with equality, where I see equity as being a destination. We want everybody to end at the same place, and equality is the journey. So rather than adjusting the journey, how people are going to learn, how we're going to allow students to reach their potential, we would rather limit their potential and say that's equitable. So, you know, I think it's all a matter of, you know, for a teacher, I would imagine it would be easier to teach for equity because you're just teaching the same thing to get to a certain point where it's much more difficult to have to change the journey of one student who struggles a little bit and to change the journey of another student who excels in order for them to both reach their potential, which is at different levels. It's not equitable. It's not the same destination.
Right. I agree. That's a fantastic insight. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I do think that there, by pushing forward this concept of equity, there are a lot of people who assume that equity means what we would understand in our society is equality of opportunity, all of the things that we've treasured in our American way of life is allowing people to utilize their talents and flourish. But that's not what this is. Equity is all about ensuring that everybody has the same outcome. And if they have to take from one person to give to another person, they will do that. in order to ensure that everybody has the same outcome, although it doesn't seem to apply to the houses owned by the founders of Black Lives Matter. But that's a different conversation. Wow. So, but it is very destructive. And I'll tell you what, you see a lot of people struggling because they want to say equality, but then they end up saying equity. So I think it is a concept that is deliberately being pushed forward to confuse us.
Words are so powerful. Hey, James, great observation. I appreciate the call. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
And it is to your point, Doctor. I think you're right. I think it's deliberate. You take a look at the language that the extreme left is using, and how they repeat this over and over again, and people accept it. Terms are redefined, and words have meaning and they're powerful. When you redefine them, that has an impact. James is listening in Illinois. James, good afternoon.
Oh, hi, Drew. This is a great topic. It's something that's been it's very, very important. It's been a big part of my journey and just in the culture wars. You know, I kind of go back. I've got 155 hours of public education from schools and universities. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of experience in the public education realm. And, you know, back in 1998, I went back to school to become a teacher. And my first education class, the woman who taught the course was a public teacher. Hmm. And she had us separate by where our beliefs were on abortion. She had us stand up in the hallway.
Wow.
And yes, I'm a cradle Catholic. Right. And, you know, actually my journey back into the church was in that time period. And I was the only person who was pro-life out of that whole class. Mm-hmm. And she really ridiculed me in front of the entire class. You know, I'm a man. I took it and I fought back with my own, you know, reasons why I believe what I did. But, you know, I basically dropped out of the teaching program because I experienced some other educators who were that way as well. And this was in 1998, you know, and this is, you know, I heard a comment the other day that these are the growing pains of Marxism. So we're actually, they're trying to force this on us.
Yep.
And I don't know if you've ever seen the film Gender Agenda.
No, I haven't. No.
Look it up. It was on EWTN. I'm trying to remember the guy who did it. There are two brothers. Yeah. They did wolves in sheep clothing.
Yeah.
But
remember that.
Anyways, you know, and I think the reason why we accept this is it kind of goes to our own fallen nature, you know, envy, where, you know, we're envious of other people, and if we can't succeed, maybe if we're on the same playing field, that's why we accept it, you know, as a culture. But, you know, just like the SpaceX capsule that was sent up, you know, you want somebody you want the best mathematician, you know,
absolutely,
setting the trajectory for your space capsule
absolutely.
In space, or do you want somebody who just, you know, we all got the same score on the test?
Hey, I'm with you. James, thank you. Let me let the doctor respond, because I know she's got to run here very quickly. I love that he said that this is the growing pains of Marxism, but he said a lot there, a lot of great points. I'll let you respond.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. I really think, though, what they're playing on in terms of the people in our culture is we do have a sense of compassion, and knowing our history, I think everybody really feels very deeply that slavery was a wrong. We understand that. And we look at the plight of children in disadvantaged neighborhoods, especially, you know, neighborhoods that are heavily minority or majority minority in these inner cities, and see that these kids are struggling in school. And we want to help, but we're ignoring the real problem, which is, you know, there are a number of problems. Number one, our federal government has had policies on the books for generations, whether it's tax policies or the regulations put in place for welfare or the public safety net, that have actively discouraged marriage. And we have, in the process, the government has over the past few decades encouraged, or should I say maybe more accurately, discouraged people, put economic disincentives on getting married. And that's not fair to children. That's not fair to their mothers. And so we've created this you know, almost cyclical poverty in these inner city communities that are marked by very, very fragile families. And now, instead of talking about how to make families stronger, again, the government is turning around and pointing its finger at the rest of us. So that would be the first point I would want to say. The second point is, these families of kids who are struggling to learn, they want their kids to learn. And the solution for this is not to dumb down education for everyone, because I don't know any parent who wants their kid to get an easy A and to take the, you know, to have everyone else pulled down to their level. Parents want their kids to succeed. If you want kids to succeed in these disadvantaged neighborhoods, give these parents school choice. Let them take their money, the money that right. goes to each child, let them take that money to a Catholic school yeah. or to a Christian school yeah. or to some other opportunity so that their child can get the education that the parents are desperately
need. Doctor, on that point, and not to interrupt you here, but Greta is in Austin. She's got a question about Catholic schools. And we're talking about public schools. You wrote a book saying, hey, get your kids out now. Let me sneak Greta in, because I know you've got to run. I'd love you to answer this question for her. Greta, sure. Good afternoon.
Hi, Greta.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Greta. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Drew, for calling. I have a question. I agree with what the doctor says about indoctrination in education leading to transgenderism education, indoctrination in critical race, math, other programs. And this has been done for decades. It's not new, and it's been done by the establishment, who is also connected to political parties. So common sense and critical thinking has been dumbed down a lot. So my question is, my children, two children, are in a charter school, which is a classical school, and I want to know whether they come under the same umbrella yeah. as the rest of the public schools.
Right,
it is a
classical
education, which is virtue-based learning.
Right. Thank you, Greta. The doctor's going to run, so let me let her respond very quickly. Thank you for your call.
That is a fantastic question, and what I have to say, unfortunately, obviously every state is different in terms of how it operates its charter schools, but at the end of the day, a charter school is a public school, and several of the states, California, for example, comes to mind, have been very insistent that they will limit the freedom of charter schools. So charter schools have been this attempt of families to try to have this workaround system where they can have a little more control over their child's education. But when it comes to critical race theory, I don't think that the charter schools are going to escape this. You may have your classical curriculum, but the state is going to come in, you know, obviously not in a place like Texas and Florida, thank goodness, but in other parts of the country, Minnesota, for example, yeah. charter schools have not been exempted. They have to teach their kids transgender ideology. They are going to have to push in this critical race theory just like the rest of the state. So it has been a stopgap measure that parents have used. But unfortunately, it is not a solution, and we have to stand up and oppose this. People are afraid to speak out because nobody wants to be called a racist. But if you don't oppose this kind of dumbing down of the educational system, you are doing a disservice to the very kids who are maybe most disadvantaged, who are stuck in these failing schools.
Doctor, is this happening in Catholic schools? We're talking about charter. You're talking about public. What about Catholic schools? I mean, they're not perfect. I'm assuming the best alternative, but. What are
yeah,
your thoughts?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Every now and then I'll hear a story about a school that starts going down this path. And here's what I will say. That is, it is antithetical to Catholic teaching to do anything that in any way supports or facilitates the spread of Marxism. And that's when if you see any of this in your Catholic school, and you know, I can speak from experience, the schools my kids go to, like exactly the opposite.
Right.
I mean, they've been fantastic. These are wonderful, vibrant, Catholic, faithful Catholic yeah. schools. But I'll tell you what, if you as a parent see a teacher starting to go down that road, because you never know,
right.
speak up and take it to your bishop and point out to them that this is destructive
yeah.
and this is a, you know, it doesn't even accord with the bishop's letter on racism. It's exactly the opposite, because the bishop's letter on racism calls for us essentially to approach each other as brothers and sisters in a colorblind way, in a
right.
sense, like respecting each other's, you know, each other's differences, while understanding and upholding the dignity of each and every person. So a philosophy that discriminates against one group in order to elevate another one is absolutely antithetical to our Catholic faith.
Well, Doctor, I want to thank you for your time. I know a lot of people want to get on board. I'll take a few more calls, but your book, I want to make sure people get the opportunity to read it. Get out now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public Schools Before It's Too Late. Assuming it's available at all major bookstores. Where they can...
as long as Amazon has it.
All right. Then we'll find out. And then personandidentity.com is a great resource. We'll link over to that for you as well. But I appreciate the extra time today. It was great talking with you.
Hey, always good to be here with you and your listeners, Drew.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
That's Dr. Teresa Farnan. Again, personandidentity.com, the book Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public Schools Before It's Too Late. I also have another theory on this. But first, let me sneak in Elizabeth. She's listening in Kingston, New York. 75 years old. She's been teaching for a while.
In New York.
Elizabeth, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have two things. I'm 75 years old, and I started out as a math teacher and then fell in love with religion. So I got my master's in religious education.
Great.
And this is not new. In 1975, I was in a Catholic grade school. I'm teaching religion, and I was sent to take training for values clarification. Mm. That was the big thing in at the moment. And I asked them, you know, when I was in the training, okay, when do you give the kids the right answer if they've come up with the wrong answer? Because the kids do all of the discussing. And they said, you don't. And I said, you must. And they said, no. Kids in inner city and kids in rural areas and all the different areas, they're all going to come up with different conclusions. I said, yeah, but some of this stuff is either true or it's false.
That's right.
It's good or it's bad. Nope, not allowed to do that. I was in a public school situation for the training.
Wow.
After that, I went back to my school and I told Sister that this was a little iffy, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, give it a try. So we had two classes. And at the end of the second class, the kids came, I don't even know what the topic was, but the kids came up with something that was so anti-Catholic in a Catholic school.
Right.
And I just stopped and I said, you know what? You may think that some of your friends may come up with this,
mm-hmm.
but here's the truth and here's why. Yes. This is what the church would like us to know. And I went to Sister and I said, we can't do this, period. And fortunately, she listened.
Well, good. I got to hold you right there. Elizabeth, thank you for listening and for calling. I have to take a short break here, but we need to speak the truth. And you are right. There are objective truths. Math is one of those objective realities that we have. It's under attack right now. We live in an age of relativism, where everyone defines their own truth the way that they want it. And the heart of this, as I said a little bit earlier, is an attempt to attack the family, to deconstruct the family, to elevate the state, to give power to the state. And they're pitting us against each other in a number of different ways. Sister Lucia dos Santos, who is the sole remaining seer of Fatima, who, of course, passed away, she said that the final confrontation between the Lord and Satan will be over family in marriage. And I see this as part of that great battle, an attack on the family, giving power to the state.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Your life.
Your life.
Your values. Connected.
Connected.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. Hey, I got to change gears. I know you want to continue to talk about critical race theory and all that we're seeing there. If you missed any of that, you might have joined the conversation a little bit late. You might have said, I'd love to have heard the beginning of it. Jake, in about probably about an hour after we sign off here, we'll have the entire broadcast up. So you can go to my podcast and listen to the show and dive into it. It's an important conversation for you to get connected to, okay? And that's relevantradio.com, and just go to the show and share the show with others. If you enjoy what you hear here, if you're new to the broadcast, tell others about the program. Again, you can listen online. You can listen over the stations in which we broadcast, and it's good to hear from you. We not only do we reach is 220 million households nationwide, but around the planet. We've got calls from South Africa and from Asia, from Europe, and it's good to have so many different people listening and be part of the conversation. You can join me anytime, 888-914-9149. I'm always trying to give you a look at life that you won't hear anywhere else quite often through a moral lens, and stories that I want you to be aware of things that loom, things that may be coming your way. I love technology. I look forward to the day of a driverless car. I look forward to, you know, I love what technology can do. And I just saw a story. I don't know how you feel about this. How would you like to use your palm? You know, we talk about biometrics, using your eyes or your fingerprints. How about your palm scan to make purchases? A lot of people don't like the idea of using biometrics. I was going through the airport the other day, and there's a, I can't remember the name of it. It's a new type of scanning where they take, I think, your retinal scans or whatever, and then you don't have to wait in line. You go right through this thing. I didn't do it. I don't want to know my biometrics, but yeah, who knows? What about a palm print? Are you down with that? Amazon's testing it out. Listen to this story coming out of Detroit on Local 4. They'll explain.
First came the credit card swipe and then the tap, and now just a wave of the hand can process a payment.
So the future just keeps coming. Let's check in with
fast.
What the mark of the beast is going on?
At a time when Elon Musk has monkeys playing Pong with their brains, Amazon is rolling out palm scanners at one of its Whole Foods stores in Seattle. The technology called Amazon One allows shoppers to pay for their purchases by holding their hands above a scanner. Before you can use it, you have to give the company your credit card information and palm print. Amazon has been testing the system at its Amazon Go and Amazon Go grocery stores. The company plans to bring it to 8 Seattle area Whole Foods stores in the coming months.
I wonder what the future is going to look like. Technology, right? Like, I'm open to it. I just want security. You know, I want privacy. My next guest, Ann Cavoukian, Dr. Ann Cavoukian, is going to be stopping by in a few minutes. We'll get her into the conversation. You can join me, too, anytime you want. But let me bring something else into the conversation, too. Okay, I'll throw one more thing out there just for us all to ruminate on. Have you ever thought about this? Like, when you make a phone call, you expect, at least I do, my conversation to be private. So when you write a letter to someone, if anyone is still writing letters today, right, you expect the contents of your letter to be private. So when a social media app gives you a way to contact another person privately, you have the same expectation, right, that the content of your message is going to remain private. That's just common sense, right? That's I'm with you. Well, that's not happening, at least with Facebook. Now, here's the thing. I mean, Facebook, if it was a nation, I think it'd be the second largest nation in the world. So many people are on it. Jake or Patrick, how many people are on Facebook right now? How many, is it 500 billion? I mean,
I'm going to have to look this up.
Not billion, not even that many people in the world. It was 500 million a couple years ago. I don't know where it is now. How many people are on Facebook? It's probably gotten big. A billion?
I'm seeing 2.8 billion. Yeah.
Okay. So now half the world practically.
And growing by the second.
Yeah, it's growing. We've got, what, 7.1 billion people in the world? Is that where we are?
I think so, yeah.
Something like that. So, I mean, we're closing in. That's a lot of people, man. Imagine Facebook with its power that it has. I learned last week that Facebook is somehow or other reading people's messages. So you're talking about a lot of people who might be using Facebook to communicate. And here's how that happened. Okay, the New York Post, they wrote a story about a woman. She's the co-founder of Black Lives Matter. I think her last name is Con Kohlers. And she's apparently Colors, right? Jake Colors is her name. She's making bank right now in her new position. She recently decided to go on a house buying spree, as you just heard my last guest point. I think she's got 4 multi-million-dollar homes. The Post found out that the property records that she spent $3.2 million on 4 homes across the country. And that, of course, is newsworthy because she describes herself as a Marxist, right? And because the money that she's using is all donated to the people who believe that Black Lives Matter is pushing their cause, which is supposedly for justice for blacks. Well, after the Post published the story, people tried to share it on Facebook. Guess what happened? They got blocked. They got blocked. And they received a message saying, your content couldn't be shared because this link goes against our community standards. But then some people tried to send it to others via the Facebook Messenger app, right? That's supposed to be private. You should be able to send whatever you want. Private communication to another person. Guess what? Yeah, you guessed it. The same thing happened. In fact, it is still happening. One of my producers today just tried to send it on through Messenger. He got the error message. And that means, of course, that Messenger somehow or other, it knows at least some of what you're communicating with other people, at least on that topic. There must be some algorithm or keyword put in there. And that makes people wonder, well, how much more they're listening in or reading on what's supposed to be private, right? That's private. Don't we care about our privacy? How much are they listening in on the audio or the video conversations you're having on Messenger? Do you want them listening in on those conversations between your kids, your spouse, somebody else you might want to share something privately with? Not me. And it's not limited to Facebook. Google listens in on your conversations. Microsoft is doing that with Skype. In fact, Jake was just telling me about a sports journalist, a guy named Jason Whitlock. You got to share that with everyone, Jake. What's happening there? That's Twitter, right?
It is truly eye-opening to see a sports journalist being banned from Twitter, Jason Whitlock. And he is more of a conservative sports journalist, from what I understand. And a couple of weeks ago, he posted about the fact that Patrice Cullors from Black Lives Matter bought that million-dollar mansion. And he says, in his own words, he said he was in Twitter jail, and no, he's not posting bail. So he just ran with it, which I think is really cool that, like, he took this to the other, you know, mainstream media and said, hey, like, I'm not going to stand for this. And Fox News talked about it and picked it up.
But I point to Twitter, which has recently locked out sports journalist Jason Whitlock for questioning the purchase of one of the BLM founders online. And here's the thing. So Twitter responds and says they lock him out because they say that he violates their privacy policy. And he says, well, I linked a dirt.com article. It doesn't provide the address of the homes that she purchased. It's covered all over the rest of the press. And he says that the problem here is that BLM has become a sacred cow. And I'm calling out that it's you know, what he said is made up of grifters. He's daring to question parts of BLM organization, and that has rendered him locked out of Twitter. So we're seeing it in the form of social justice movements as well, and there are investigations being called for that organization. And if corruption, just money mismanagement, any type of fraud will be discovered, it guaranteed that will not be covered by the mainstream media, and it will likely be blocked or suppressed by social media.
Big tech, right? The power of big tech. Facebook, 2.8 billion. Dr. Ann Cavoukian joins me. She's the executive director of the Global Privacy and Security by Design. Yeah, doctor, it's so good to have you here. Thank you for joining me again. Isn't this crazy?
Thank you, Drew. It's crazy, but you know what I love about it? They're saying they're protecting this information because of privacy. They're protecting somebody's privacy in that way.
That's a great point.
You've got to be able to laugh these days.
Oh,
because,
man.
I mean, obviously, I respect people protecting people's privacy and following privacy policies, which is what Facebook said they were doing. But, I mean, we do this selectively, it seems. It doesn't seem to be across the board.
Go ahead. Go right ahead.
No, Drew, I was just going to jump ahead to the palm print story because I can't tell you how much I have to say about it.
Please.
And I'm going to surprise you.
You love it.
Because I want it. Let me explain why. With biometrics, which are like fingerprints, palm prints, iris scans, whatever, there's two ways you can use it. One is called one-to-many, where your palm print or your iris is compared to thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. That is a horrible violation of privacy. But not only that, it creates a lot of what are called false positives, where your biometric is compared to other people falsely. Very, very high false positive rates, 81%, 96%. A lot of places are banning, like states in the United States, they're banning facial recognition because of all the false positives of a facial image. So one to many is terrible. But let me contrast that with this. This is called a one-to-one comparison. And believe it or not, Drew, I have this. I have global entry when I come into the United States. So why did I accept this? Obviously, it makes your life much easier and faster movement. But the only thing that is compared, your live biometric, let's say my iris scan when I go to the airport, is compared to a biometric that I have given that appears on my passport, for example, or something else. So the live biometric is compared to an image which you have granted and consented to. That's called a one-to-one comparison. And those are highly secure and highly reliable, Drew. So in this example...
Is there any chance, so I understand this,
yeah,
somebody can take the biometrics that's now in a database of yours and use it in any other way?
I'm not saying it's not possible, but it is, depending on, of course, the level of security linked with the protection of the data, which I'm sure is going to be extremely high here. It would be, I mean, I shop at Whole Foods all the time. It would be wonderful to go there, and I just have to show them my palm print, which I would have given on one previous occasion, so they have a record of it, and they compare the record I gave to them to my live hand palm print, one-to-one comparison. Very, very secure, very privacy protective. Now, obviously, you're saying, well, someone could steal the palm prints in the database they have with these palm prints.
Right.
But it would be of no value because the palm print that they have on record has to be compared to a live palm print. So if they steal your palm print that's in the database, they're not going to steal your hand. They're not going to have the live palm print. So they're not going to be able to do the one-to-one comparison, which is all that is permitted in this particular application.
The other, I was going through the airport the other day. I was actually flying back to where I live here, and there was no line. And normally when there's a line, there's there's a thing called Clear. I think it's Clear is what I'm trying to remember.
Yes.
I think they went to retinal scan or something along those lines. And
yep.
And
yep.
I said, well, no, thanks. There's no line. I went right up to the TSA and went through. But it was like, she says, why not? I said, well, I just don't want my biometrics in somebody's database. You know, that's what I said. But maybe I'm wrong on this because, I have complete respect for you because I know how big you are on privacy and security. And I travel internationally a lot. I remember flying to Africa one time. I don't know whether it was in Ghana or Tanzania or someplace like that. And they actually had me record. They recorded my palm print and fingerprints before they let me into the country. So I'm probably in a database somewhere. Anyway, what was that for? Like, I did not want to do that, but I'm halfway across the planet right now. And I'm thinking either they scan my handprint. Or what do I do? Get back on a flight and go home? So
Where was that, Drew?
I want to say it was Ghana. I want to say it was Ghana, in Western Africa, or else it was Tanzania, which borders the Indian Ocean.
I certainly don't agree with that. You should never be forced to relinquish your biometric of any kind. Of course, it has to be voluntary. Privacy is all about control, personal control, where you decide how sensitive information, especially like your biometric, is used. But I'm telling you, in certain applications, as I said, I've got the global entry coming into the United States. It makes it so much easier from Canada. And these are highly secure, and they make life so much easier. Yeah. And I have the confidence because, you know, they check you out first when you're applying for this, and it has to be real. So I don't know. I haven't looked under the hood for what they're going to be using. Is it Amazon at Whole Foods? So that I would have to look at it in detail. But my guess is they're doing a one-to-one comparison, meaning they collect your palm print at some point, they have it on record, and then when you show up, you use your live palm print. It's compared to the one they have on record, and that's what it's billed to. So I will check it out, but all stands up, I'll do it.
So, you know, just so there's probably many people who share my same concern. I mean, are we too scrupulous or too concerned about biometrics? Because here's the thing. I mean, part of me thinks, okay, well, I don't want my fingerprints. I don't want my palm prints. Right? Look, if somebody wanted my fingerprint or palm print, they could get to my car while I'm here doing the radio show and lift my fingerprint off my car, right off the door handle, and they can have it. I mean, you can take a photograph practically. I mean, so it's not like that stuff is super confidential anymore. Now, your retina might be a little bit different, but...
No, but we have to be extremely concerned with one-to-many use comparisons for biometrics. Please remember this. One-to-many is where your biometric, iris scan, facial image, palm print, whatever, is compared to hundreds of thousands, millions of others out there. And it is appalling. In the United Kingdom, in England, they've had facial image comparisons forever. They have like 4.2 million facial images, and they compare them to people on the street or walking or committing a crime or something like that. The lowest estimate of error rate is 81%.
Oh, my Lord.
81% of the time, they falsely identify someone. Wow. And when I was privacy commissioner, people would come to me with cases of identity theft and say, what am I going to do? They think I stole this thing. That's not me. Right. It had to be somebody else. Clearing your name. What I used to say is go to the police, file an occurrence report. So at least there's some record of you claiming identity theft. But it's appalling. And in Detroit last year, there was an exam. They actually did the stats. 96% of the time, it was false. 96%. They've thrown it out.
Well, that's because it's early in the technology. I'm assuming as the technology gets better, that failure rate's going to decrease. And how's China with this? Because I know China uses it all the time, right?
Oh, China's appalling. China doesn't care if they get the right person or not.
Yeah.
Don't get me going about China. And their social credit scores? Oh, my God. There was this case in China. This brilliant high school student graduates. He wants to go to university. He applies to several universities in China. He gets rejected from all of them. Why? Because the social credit scores of his parents were considered to be unacceptable. Can you imagine? They're punishing the child for the faults of the parents, like the parents, you know, jaywalk too much. Oh, appalling. Don't get me wrong.
Unbelievable.
But back to biometrics.
Doctor, hold the thought. Just hold the thought. I'm gonna let you pick it up on the other side. I've got to take a break here, unfortunately. Love having you. You're one of my favorites. I tell you that all the time. I love your passion. Dr. Ann Cavoukian's here. I'm approaching the twilight of the program. If you want to get in on the conversation, last chance to do so. I'll open the phones. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. You can follow Dr. Cavoukian on Twitter at Ann Cavoukian. Also find her GPSbydesign.com. We'll be back with more conversations. Stay with us.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's always great to hang out with you and take a look at life and the many challenges that we face and best ways to navigate them. We are living in an era and a time that I find personally exciting. I love technology. I love where it can lead us. And, of course, it always has to be used properly. Privacy has to be maintained, security. And that's what we're talking about today with Dr. Ann Cavoukian. And I found a disturbing story about Facebook. As I was mentioning, Facebook has a population of 2.8 billion people. I mean, think about that. That would be one of the largest nations in the world. You know, it's crazy how many people are on Facebook. So you would hope that those who have the reins or the controls would make sure that, you know, the those who use it, that their information be safe and secure. The story I had heard, as I mentioned, is that they might be, you know, reading messages and listening in on conversations. And I was just talking off the air with Dr. Ann Cavoukian, and she is she's the executive director of the global. She's the executive director of Global Privacy and Security by Design. You can check their website out. It's gpsbydesign.com. gpsbydesign.com. Easy to remember, right? Or and follow her at Ann Cavoukian online. She's a you can get her on Twitter right there. But she's best known for the creation of this Privacy by Design. It was unanimously adopted as an international framework for privacy and data protection in 2010. And we were talking off air, and she says, you know, Facebook, you know, yeah, they got a lot of security problems, Drew, but there's one aspect of Facebook that I really want to address. And wait till you hear what it is. You might already use it. And, Doctor, let's pick it up there. So we talk about Facebook, and as you mentioned, a lot of security issues, a lot of problems you have with them. What aspect of Facebook's operation do you like?
Well, Drew, what I like about Facebook's operation is WhatsApp. WhatsApp is a messaging service. You can, you know, talk to your friends and communicate and do everything you want online. But it is totally, totally secure. They have end-to-end encryption that applies to WhatsApp. And what that means is nobody can break into this. And I've checked it out because I'll give you an example outside of Facebook for a moment. Sure. I've been fighting back doors to end-to-end encryption for years, starting with the Clipper chip in the late 90s, and we could go on and on. A back door is, you know, law enforcement or the bad guys trying to break into
your crypto. It's called end-to-end encryption. They're trying to create arguably legitimate backdoors for law enforcement. I object to it completely. I've been fighting it for years. Facebook contacted me recently. They, in WhatsApp, they also have end-to-end encryption, which is amazing, which I totally support. And they pointed out different examples of countries that are now trying to break WhatsApp through a backdoor. In India, for example, they've been doing this for a while, and they're trying to make it legally a requirement. So it's something that I am fighting all over the world, because it's not just here. You know, the Five Eyes are now looking at it. Australia actually passed a law that allows backdoors now. We have to fight this with everything we have, because the minute you give a backdoor key to anybody in law enforcement, the bad guys are also going to get it. In fact, a few years ago, 15 of the world's leading cryptographers, data scientists, wrote an amazing article called Keys Under Doormats. Why do they call it that? They wanted to appeal to the layperson and said, just as you may leave a key under the doormat to enable your child to gain entry into the home if he or she has lost their key, it will also allow the bad guys, the thieves, to break into your house. And they said, crypto backdoors will completely undermine security of everyone. We cannot allow this to happen. So in that sense, with Facebook's WhatsApp having this amazing end-to-end encryption, we're fighting crypto backdoors all across the world.
That's amazing. So what is it about the technology that, let's say, somebody else doesn't use? I mean, are other is Google and others going to start to use this as well? Or where are we in terms of the future of this? It just seems like it's
everyone
a good thing.
Is looking, yes, and everyone is looking at end-to-end encryption precisely for that reason. We're doing it in the United States, of course. Many companies do it. People use this. You know, Apple, for example, has been featuring this from the beginning with their iPhone, for example. It's all encrypted end-to-end. In fact, a number of years ago, 5 years ago, James Comey, when he was Attorney General, went to Apple and they said, we've got this guy's phone, iPhone. We just arrested him, but we can't break into it. Right. Apple break into it for us. And they said, we can't break into it. It has end-to-end encryption. We don't have the keys. And they said, yeah, but surely you could come up with a system that would develop that. And they said, why would we do that? We offer our customers end-to-end encryption. They know it's completely protected. Yeah. We will continue doing that.
You know, Apple,
so I applaud them.
Do you remember the Apple, what was that situation where I think the feds wanted to get into somebody's iPhone. I don't know whether it was a terrorist or maybe it was one of the, it was maybe a bomber or somebody in here. I'm trying to recall what happened. And Apple would not unlock it because of the security. But they did get somebody to do that. Didn't the FBI hire a hacker or somebody got in, didn't they?
They went to Israel. Yeah, they went to Israel. There were specialists there who broke it. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but Apple wouldn't do it. That's why I applaud them. They stood up to the government, to law enforcement, again and again. They've done this over the years. I applaud them. End-to-end encryption, we must maintain that.
Boy, that's absolutely amazing that Israel was able to get in. I mean, nothing is really secure, is it?
Look, ultimately, things can be broken eventually.
Yeah.
But you don't make it the norm. We all have iPhones. And, you know, I don't think twice about using my iPhone completely privately and securely.
Wow. Right, my guest today, Dr. Ann Cavoukian, and maybe I'll grab a call or two for you. Let's go to Marianne listening in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Marianne, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm here. I just wanted to tell you that I posted a picture of Our Lady on Doer of Knots. Mm-hmm. It was a holy card from Portrait of Saints on a Facebook post. Huh. And I got a notice that it was against community standards. I couldn't believe it. I thought, you got to be kidding.
That's bizarre.
It was Our Lady on Doer of Knots.
Yeah.
Thank
you, Marianne. I appreciate it. It is, you know, the censorship that we are seeing, though, online is, I mean, the power that big tech has. I mean, and Facebook's an example that, I mean, really, it's an image of the Virgin Mary that you got to ban. We saw what happened during the elections. We see the power that big tech has. Just in terms of your big picture view, are we going to see big tech being broken up, or will there be some sort of international standards that will limit their ability to do this type of thing?
You know, it's a chess game, back and forth, back and forth. But let me tell you one good development that is increasing our power and our ability to protect our information. There's a whole movement to decentralize data, decentralization. There's a decentralized identity foundation in the United States, and big companies, IBM, Microsoft, et cetera, they're all moving to allowing individuals to decentralize their identity. So that your identity information, your personal information relating to your photos, your other codes and things of that nature would be retained by you in the cloud, in a secure enclave in the cloud, and you and only you would be able to authorize the release of that data. So there is a whole movement towards decentralization, which will strengthen our privacy and our security.
Wow, that's good news. Well, Doctor, I have about a moment left. I want to get people plugged in to you as well. They can follow you at Ann Cavoukian. Is that the best way to do that? And then what about your website?
Yeah,
what will
Twitter.
They find there?
You can follow me on Twitter. My website, gpsbydesigncenter.com. You'll find all the articles I've been doing, and I do a lot of media interviews. So just, I want to give people hope. Don't give up. Yes, surveillance is mounting, but so are strengths that we can protect our privacy and security. Do not give up, ever.
Yeah, after all this talk about big tech, we're plugging socials. It's good to have you with me, though, Doctor. It's funny, look, look, it's part of life. It's only going to get bigger and better and faster. And as I want to thank you for your vigilance in making sure that people's privacy and security is paramount. We have to do that as we continue to enter this new world. So, hey, always good to talk to you. Let's catch up again soon, okay?
Yes, it's always a pleasure talking to you, Drew. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Dr. Ann Cavoukian, and I'm up against the clock and out of time. I think I said her website. I was referencing Twitter. The interweb, that's where we are. I am out of time. Thank you for allowing me to hang out with you. It's good to be back. I'll be back again tomorrow, 21 hours from now. You can set your watch, okay? I'll give you a look at life you won't find anywhere else. Kel Clark is coming up in just a moment. Stay tuned for him. Until tomorrow, remember, God loves you. And so do I. Have a great afternoon.